Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome again to the Last Knock Horror Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Crash. Johnny Numb, I think he's sitting at home with his cat Vice on his lap, petting it and planning taking over the world because it's a white cat and that's what villains do. But anyway, I'm here tonight with a very special guest, a unique guest, because as I was telling this person before the show, I was doing my research, my due diligence, and I really didn't find much, and that's actually pretty good. So this is a gentleman who has a movie out. Maybe you've seen it. If not, you're going to hear all about it and then want to see it. It is called Unlisted Owner, and it is from co-writer and director and actor. And, well, you do a whole bunch more in it, man. Jed Bryan, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure. I saw some stills, and I was impressed, and then, you know, we connected on Twitter, and here we are.
Yep.
So the reason that I was really, like, amazed is normally when someone has, because this is a full feature, this is a feature film, 74 minutes. Yep. And whenever somebody has a feature film out, you know, I usually see, like, other short films or something on IMDb, and there's nothing there.
Yep.
Yeah, so how did this happen? Were you one day, like, you know, sitting back, watching TV, drinking a beer, going, I'm going to make a horror movie, or, like, what?
So, basically, ever since I was a little kid, I've always loved horror films. I had the VHS tape, House on Haunted Hill. I had the monster movie King Kong versus Godzilla, and one night when I was a kid, I snuck downstairs and caught a little glimpse of Puppet Master. It gave me nightmares. So I've always loved horror. My parents used to decorate pretty big for Halloween, and they used to take me and my brother to haunted houses in Evansville, Indiana. And I've always, you know, loved horror. And I actually, what kind of got me the bug about filmmaking was I kept coming up with some different movie ideas, and then I saw Eli Roth's Hostel. And that kind of blew me away because it wasn't the traditional, you know, Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers thing. I mean, this was something that, you know, wow, this could, you know, I could go to another country. This could actually happen to me. So it kind of got me thinking about real life horror. And me and my friends had talked about writing different scripts and stuff. And we had sat down and actually wrote a few. I actually wrote a script called Meth House that we actually have a teaser trailer for. It's available on YouTube. You can check out. We didn't have the funds to make it. It's actually a traditionally shot film. So that was the first thing we ever shot. And then we entered a GoDaddy commercial contest, and I think it was like 2009 or 10, maybe somewhere in there. And we got 8th out of 539 videos.
Nice.
So, yeah, so I was very pleased with that. I directed that and wrote that one. And then I kind of got to the point to where, you know, we didn't have enough funds to make a traditionally shot film, and I wanted to make a feature-length film. I didn't want to go for a short. I wanted to see what we could do feature-wise. So I kind of got to thinking and put pen to paper and came up with the whole concept of Unlisted Owner. And me and my buddy Tyler, Tyler helped co-write a little bit of it with me, but the story and everything else, I kind of came up with my head and wrote the script around my friends and kind of made Unlisted Owner.
Excellent. And this is this would fall into the found footage subgenre, from what I understand, or no?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it is.
Why did you go that route?
Funding mainly. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't originally a traditionally shot script. It was always, I wrote it around found footage, which was very different because all the other scripts I had written in the past were all, you know, traditionally shot.
Right.
And that kind of puts a little bit of a challenge with found footage because a lot of people don't really think of, you know, oh, found footage is someone walking around with a video camera. There's a lot more that goes into it than just that. I mean, it's really hard to do, you know, camera tricks. I mean, if you're like, you have a scene in a movie to where, you know, you're going to show one thing and you want something crazy to happen, like someone busts through the glass, you can, you know, film your actors on one side and then you can cut and then show another angle of the actual thing happening.
Right.
But for a found footage film, you're limited to your little viewfinder. And if you want to get these specific shots in there, it has to happen in real time, or you have to do some type of blend or jerk edit to be able to try to make it look real.
Gotcha, man. So the, you know, when I think, were there any, well, actually, no, why don't you give us a little synopsis of the movie without giving it away, of course?
Yeah, for sure. Unlisted Owner, like I said, it's a feature-length found footage horror film. It's about a group of friends who hear about a family of five that have been murdered in this house about a mile away from where they're camping at. And they go to the house, and I have a new video camera, so I'm filming everything. And there's police cars and ambulances there. They're pulling a body out of the house on a gurney. And one of my friends, Griffin, says, "I don't want to go camping this close to where someone's been murdered." Well, we convince him to go, so we're out there partying, having a good time, and we hear on the radio that they caught the killer. Well, Gavin, who's kind of like the party guy, let's go have crazy fun, talks us into going to the house and investigating it with our handheld cameras. Gotcha. So we go back to the house, and that's when all the craziness happens without giving too much away.
Sure, sure. No, that's great. The so how did this really happen? Because I know so many people, you know, whether they're a first time, you know, director or not, you know, they're like, yeah, let's make a movie, and yeah, I'm planning on making a movie, and then 5 years go by, and this and that. How did you make it really happen? Like, what did you do?
Well, like I said before, me and my friends, we had written scripts and different things like that, and we had done a few little things here and there, and I finally got to the point where it's like, you know, we keep talking about doing something, mm-hmm. and nobody was really taking the lead, so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to try to put pen to paper and figure out a concept. And whenever I pitched the idea to my friends, they were all like, yeah, let's do it. So we had to scout locations, and there was a couple of people we had to cast, but the majority of the script is actually written around my friends and kind of like the different mannerisms they say, different ways they convey things. Mm-hmm. So that kind of made it a little bit easier to be able to shoot the film as well. But yeah, everybody was on board, and everything just kind of fell into place.
Right. Now, sometimes it's funny, like, I've seen people, like, they put friends and family in their movies before, and it's like, oh, man, that was a mistake. You know, it's like, you know, because they can't tell their uncle what to do, or their one friend or something like that. How did you get around that? Did you just, like, you know, carry a big stick and smack them around, or?
It was actually really weird. In the film, two of my best friends, Gavin and Tyler, are actually in the film, and the characters they play are like very, very douchey jock characters that a lot of people hate. I mean, they really hate these guys. And some of the people are like, I can't believe you're friends with these people and all this other stuff. And it's like, they weren't like that at all. Everything ran smooth. I told them what I wanted to do. Actually, before we even started shooting, I had the main cast, and we all went over to Tyler's house, who co-wrote the movie.
Right.
And we sat around and we did a roundtable read of the whole script.
Nice.
And we went back and forth on, you know, like sometimes they would say, well, my character wouldn't say it this way. Can we change it another way? And we'd go through and we'd rewrite and stuff like that.
Awesome.
And I mean, nobody really objected to anything. Of course, you know, in the script, I didn't really write anything that I figured that they would be like, I don't know if I want to do this or anything like that. If it was like more of like a challenging scene, you know, I knew who would be more apt to do that than someone else. So that, I mean, it actually kind of worked out for the better for me than casting somebody for a role and then they'd be like, I ain't doing that, you know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So, and whenever you're an indie filmmaker, I mean, every day counts. So you can't have something like that happen or it's going to screw up everything. And you have no time to go back and rewrite or anything like that. So, I mean, it actually worked out really well. And no one really, you know, no one got in any fights. Everything ran smooth. Everybody was there on time. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better group of friends to help me with this movie.
Oh, that's fantastic, man. Glad to hear that.
Yep.
Man, I'm sure you've heard horror stories too, where, you know, people just wanted to jump off a bridge just because of personalities. So how long was the shoot?
Well, that's the kind of the funny part. On IMDb, it says 2013.
Right.
The film finally was released publicly in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a long time. We actually started filming in 11. We finished up shooting in mid-12, I believe. We edited everything. We showed it in 13, and twice in Vincennes, Indiana. We showed it once in Evansville, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to go the film festival route, and that turned out not to be as successful as we had hoped. We didn't get into any of the film festivals we actually submitted for, unfortunately.
I'm sorry.
And, it's fine. I mean, it was kind of demoralizing a little bit because it was like, you know, everything I had read online was, you know, you got to get in the festivals, you got to get the word out about your film if you want distribution for it. So, and where I live is a small town called Sumner, Illinois. I mean, our closest mall is an hour and a half. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no big distribution companies around in this area anyways. So right. My wife's family, we actually took a trip out to Los Angeles, and I found out about the American film market out there. Mm-hmm. And someone had told me, hey, if you have a film and you want to get distribution for it, you need to check out the American film market. So I found out that it was, I think it was the following week. So I had no time to prep or anything for it. So I had to wait an entire year for the American film market to roll around. And we showed it twice at the American film market. And after everything was said and done, we had three different distribution companies who were very interested in the film.
Excellent.
And then we ended up getting an entertainment lawyer. And then in 16, we signed our deal. And then my distributor gave me a list of deliverables, and one of the main deliverables was an M&E track, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with an M&E track or not, but it's basically the dialogue separated from the background sound so foreign markets can dub over your voices.
Right.
Well, since this is a found footage film, we didn't have someone running around with a boom mic and then come in afterwards and do foliage work. And another problem is with found footage, there's no musical score in the background to cover up a lot of the things that you see in movies that, you know, people mm-hmm. do, you know, motions and there's no sound for it.
Right.
So that was, I mean, we had 74 minutes of footage that we had to recreate every sound effect for the entire film for.
Oh my God. Oh man. Oh.
Yeah. We had sent the film off for a quality check. And we heard back on the quality check that one of the major things was we had to have an M&E track. So we had to actually go back through it took us from February of last year to July of last year to recreate every sound effect. And it was, you know, and I'm not a foliage artist sound guy at all. You know, so it was like the school of hard knocks, hardcore, but we got it done.
Awesome.
But yeah, probably one of the kind of like little funny Easter egg is when it gets released in the foreign markets in the film, I have a fictional girlfriend, Andrea, and me and Andrea have a kiss in the movie. Well, I have a wife now, so to recreate this kiss sound, I actually kiss my wife. So in the foreign markets, whenever that time comes and they dub our voices, you'll see me kissing Andrea, but the sound is actually me kissing my wife. So
nice. Oh man, that's pretty wild.
Well, yeah, it was definitely a different experience.
Yeah, I guess so. So what was your, when you were shooting, because every day, I mean, it's not that you wait for something to go wrong, but I mean, you're waiting for that unexpected like catastrophe or problem.
Right.
During production, anything come up that made you that was like really a hurdle, or?
Yeah, we actually had two things. The first thing was we have a camping scene in the film, and I had a scene written to where, and how I scheduled the shoot was it was going to be an all day shoot. Usually, I divided it up. We were going to shoot in like around 9 or 10, and you know, end at like 1 or 2, and then if we had a night shoot, we'd start around 8 or 9. So I tried to schedule it where I could stack as much stuff up in the same day as possible so we could get it shot quicker. Well, Andrea had to work one day and she forgot that she had to work and couldn't get off. And that was the day we were going to do the setting up camp scene. Well, we already had the night scene of us camping, so I wouldn't have to do it on two different days. Mm-hmm. And so we got all the tents set up for that night since we couldn't do the day shoot. And, that night, some of my buddies, they wanted to go out and party, and some of them live a little bit further away than where we were shooting at. So they were like, oh, we're going to party tonight. We're going to sleep in the tents, you know, because I wanted to take down the tents because I knew we were going to have to use them again for setting up the camp. And the next day was the big scene where we had the police cars and ambulances there, and we were pulling the body out of the house, and we had the bystanders. It was going to be the big shoot. So I wanted to make sure I was going to be well rested, and I wanted everybody else to be. But like you said earlier, with your friends, you know, you can't really be too much of a stickler. So, and they were like, "Oh, we'll take care of it. We'll take them down and stuff." I'm like, "All right." So the next day, they ended up partying. I can't remember how late they did, but they did not even stay at the campsite. They stayed at another person's house. So all that stuff was still set up there, and it was like the windiest day of shooting for us.
Oh, man.
So actually I had to send down one of our one of the firefighters in the film down to take everything down. And when I got all the stuff back, everything was so mixed up and jumbled up, I couldn't set up the tents again to be able to do the camping scene. So we had to go back and completely rewrite the camping scene to be able to fit up. Not being able to have any of the tents set up. So,
oh, God.
But it ended up pretty funny. I mean, we still added the elements in there we wanted to.
Right.
But it still, like I said, it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, but I was very pleased with the end result.
Good.
But probably the biggest hurdle we had was there's a scene actually where we go to a cemetery without spoiling too much. And in the film, I had said earlier that we did these blend edits or jerk edits. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves with found footage films is whenever they're recording and all of a sudden, bam, they do a hard edit and stop and they cut to something else or they cut to someone else's camera. So in my film, there's a lot of takes that seem like they go on forever. And this road trip scene is one of them. And basically what we did was I do these things called blend edits or jerk edits to where we'll do a scene. At the end of the scene, I'll drop that camera and I'll bring it back up. And then I'll stop. Then when we do the next scene, I will back up into the last scene just a little bit, do that same drop, and then continue into the next scene. And then we'll cut them, put the scene side by side in the editor, and it looks like one fluid motion.
Right. Nice.
So whenever we were at the camp, when we showed up at the cemetery, I get out of the vehicle. So and we cut, and then my actors kept saying they were getting cold. Well, I forgot that in the scene, Gavin takes the keys out of the vehicle because he wants us to go into the cemetery. So I tell him, "Yeah, go ahead and start the vehicle up. Just leave the lights off." Forgetting that the vehicle sound is going to be different from when I'm in the vehicle to out of the vehicle.
Right.
So after we shot that and put it in the editor, it took me and my assistant director about 20-30 minutes to figure out what was wrong with the scene because everything was lining up perfect. But it was like something's not right, and we just kept thinking and thinking. And then all of a sudden I went, "Oh, my God." He goes, "What?" And I'm like, "The vehicle's running." It goes from no vehicle running. You don't even hear it start up to all of a sudden it's just magically running.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So we actually had to go back almost 6 months later and reshoot that scene to be able to, which I didn't have my actors in the vehicle anymore because I didn't need them. I just needed Gavin and Tyler since they were in the cemetery, and I was the one that went and looked for them. So,
Well, I'm glad you figured it out. That must have been driving you nuts.
Oh, it was brutal. I was just like, and you know, I couldn't get everybody together. That was like the biggest problem, you know, trying to get everybody together to be able to shoot that scene. That's the reason it took like 6 months to be able to do.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, what's your background? How did you, I mean, you did so much on this film. I mean, obviously you produced, you did some of the editing, production design, art direction, you didn't do costumes, but I mean, the list goes on. And, you know, for an independent film, you know, everybody wears like many different hats. But, you know, how did you prepare for this with the equipment and everything else? Did you have it? Were you studying film or?
Well, I actually went to school for digital entertainment game design. And I fell in love with the video editing aspect of it, and that's kind of where I kind of also kind of helped me decide, you know, I'd written some scripts and stuff, but then that really helped me understand video editing, and my assistant director, Brent, was awesome, and he was kind of my tech guy and stuff, but, you know, and plus my two buddies, Tyler and Gavin, you know, if I had a question about how we were going to do something, I would talk to them. That we actually have a hangman scene in the film where somebody's hanging. I don't want to give too much away, but actually there's a GIF online of it. But the whole rig, there's no harness or anything. Whenever he was hanging, we had a custom rig that we designed ourselves and built and was completely safe. And it doesn't look like he's all bunched up or anything like that. So.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I depended, like, whenever I get to a situation where, like, I don't know how we're going to do this exactly, I kind of bring everybody together and we'd figure it out. So.
Well, this is great because this is in the same vein of, you know, Quentin Tarantino and, you know, Robert Rodriguez and even Lloyd Kaufman, you know, make your own damn movie. And
Well, I appreciate you putting me in that category. I feel honored. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. No, I mean, I mean, I did a short film that was 30 minutes. It was a 4-day shoot, and you know, I did some others, and I know that, you know, it's a labor of love, but it just sucks your brain out of your head and all your energy, and you know, collaborating with a whole bunch of people to try and make it, you know, as perfect as possible. And so I think it's fantastic. Even when I see, like, you know, when I'm watching like a bad horror movie, it's like, okay, it's bad, it's not good, but these people made it. They made it happen, you know? So it's like great for them, you know?
It's a labor of love, and with found footage especially, I mean, that's one thing. Like, if you shoot a traditionally shot horror movie, you know, I mean, you sometimes you're gonna have hokey stuff, but in found footage, it's you're looking at something completely different because you're trying to convey something that really happened. Like, this is a real event. This is, you know, real life stuff. And you know, that's kind of a little bit more of the challenge, which I don't think a lot of people give found footage credit to, is, I mean, your acting has to be believable as,
Oh
you
yeah.
know, as crap, or you know, people are just going to tear it apart if it seems too scripted.
Oh, absolutely. And I love found footage. I love the subgenre. I know some people don't like it for many different reasons, but it's that whole element, like you were saying, of reality. It feels real, and if it's done right, forget it. It's gonna rock.
Yeah, I've had some people have described Unlisted Owner as a reality show gone bad, like reality TV.
That sounds like a good compliment, man. I like that.
I was really pleased when I heard that one. But yeah, I mean, and that's one thing, you know, found footage really does get a bad rap, and that was one of the challenges with getting the film out there, I think, you know, into the film festivals and stuff. Because when I went out to the American film market and I was pitching the movie to different distribution companies, a lot of them were like very interested, because they're always, some of them were like, okay, give me your 30-second pitch, give me your 2-minute pitch, you know, and you had to pitch your movie in that amount of time. And at the very end, I would say found footage, and they'd stop me and they said, I'll tell you what, your storyline sounds great until you said found footage. And that just kind of, that killed it for us.
So then with your other pitches, you just left those two words out, or what?
No, actually, I wanted to make sure, like, because even if you did pitch it, and I mean, there were several different distribution companies I had sent screeners to as well. So, you know, you always have to put that in there, because the last thing I wanted to do is just kind of have them like at a surprise and be like, because at the American Film Market, there's so many different people there meeting with so many different distribution companies that a lot of times they can't keep straight who's who. So if I tell them one thing and they didn't hear found footage the entire time they were there, and they get a found footage film, they're going to be like, oh, I don't, you know, I don't remember this. So.
I gotcha. That makes sense. So what were what are some of your actually, you know, favorite found footage films?
My favorite found footage film would be Grave Encounters. I love Grave Encounters. It's shot, and actually, I didn't get to see Grave Encounters till actually I had already started working on Unlisted Owner.
Oh, really?
And I actually, before I started Unlisted Owner, I had only actually watched, I think, two or I think maybe four found footage films, and it was, I think, Record. I think I watched Record before. Blair Witch for sure. Paranormal one and Paranormal two.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And maybe, I think actually before we started shooting, actually I forgot about this till just now. Myself and the main cast, we all went and saw Paranormal Activity 3 before we started filming Unlisted Owner. We all went as like as a group and went and watched it. And I just kind of wanted my actors to be familiar with, you know, found footage and how it would be shot, and kind of like what point of view we were going to be looking at. And it was just kind of ironic that Paranormal Activity, I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was three. It was the one where the monster, where his name's Toby or whatever. So it was kind of cool that that was happening at the same time, and I was able to like go with the cast to see this movie. And you know, right before we, I think it was like a week or two before we started shooting, so it was kind of cool.
That's excellent. Oh man. In your film, because I remember you saying, you know, found footage is so much more than one person walking around with a camera. Did you have like several people with cameras, or I mean, I don't know, do you want it to be, if you want it to be a surprise for when people watch it, that's cool. I mean, we don't have to go there.
No, not at all. There's actually, I think there's, let's see, let me add them all up here. I think there's four different cameras. And there's one police dash cam in the film.
Nice.
So, and oh, wait, I guess there is an interrogation video as well. So there's six, I think there's six different camera views that you'll see in the film. But one thing we did different than a lot of found footage films, like I had said before, I wanted to try to minimize those hard edits as much as possible. There are some in the film, but what I did was the film is actually edited as crime scene evidence by the Wofford County Sheriff's Department. And at the beginning, you read this thing, and it says this is compiled evidence from the events known as the owner killings. So in between, when we do those hard edits, we put these police evidence placards up that says the date, the case number, the name of the person whose camera it is, and all that information there to kind of give it a more believable, police type feel. And also, I'm a big silent film fan. Love silent film.
Oh, nice. Excellent.
So it was kind of like a little title card, little thing in there too. Just like, I just. But
Very cool.
whenever you said, this is just more than just a person walking around with a camera, we actually built a set for the film. There's a scene in the movie that involves an attic space and another one that involves a ceiling. And I'm not going to give too much away here, but this house did not have an attic space. So to be able to overcome this obstacle, we actually had a fake room built to the specs of the real room with this attic space in it. And that's where those blend edits came in to play. Whenever people watch the film and that attic space scene happens, I think there's like four or five, I think maybe six edits within like a 15-second period. And I haven't had anybody point them out yet. And
Good.
I mean, and there's been people who have been tearing it apart on, Amazon because, they don't like found footage and stuff. So, I mean, but no one has pointed that out, so.
Awesome. Oh man. Then so what would you like to share with, people who are love horror, want to make a movie, what lessons? You're a sage now, so what could you tell other people?
Well, I would say if you're sitting around with your friends and you just keep talking about it, it's not going to happen until you just say, I'm going to do it. And I mean, that's kind of the situation I was in. And also, if you make a film and you believe it's good and you submit it to the different film festivals and you don't get in, don't get discouraged. Just keep trying. If you believe you have a good product and you believe in what you're doing and you believe that, it's something that you think other people will enjoy, just keep going for it. Don't just shelf it and write it off as, you're not going to be able to be a filmmaker. I mean, I just kept going for it, and now I got a worldwide distribution deal for the film. The film made as high as ninth on Amazon's top 100 hot new horror releases for DVD.
Fantastic.
We stayed on the top 100 horror release for DVD list for 15 weeks. So, I
Nice.
mean, you just never know. You just never know. So just, go for it. If you have the mindset to do it and the resources, I mean, just work around what you have and you can do anything.
Man, and you did. That's excellent. Oh man. So what are you planning next then?
Well, it just kind of depends on how well Unlisted Owner does. Like I said, it just depends on what we get coming in from the film. I would love to shoot a traditionally shot film. I mean, I could always maybe do Unlisted Owner 2. Unfortunately, there's people living in the house right now, so I'd have to kind of figure out a way around that one. When we actually shot the film, there wasn't anybody living in the house.
Oh,
But
man.
yeah, so now we're going to have to try to figure that out if we have to go Unlisted Owner 2 route. But I'm hoping that Unlisted Owner makes enough money to be able to put it into a traditionally shot film, and that's kind of the plan, to put all the money just reinvested into this. I'm not looking to make a whole bunch of money and build a big house and all that other stuff. Everything I make off of this, I'm just reinvesting into it and just trying to make make more films. Because I mean, there's nothing better than having an idea in your head, and because when you tell somebody, if you pitch somebody a script or if you tell somebody a story, what they envision in their mind is completely different than what you envision in your mind. I had a teacher tell me
Sure.
that when she read Jurassic Park, and then she seen the movie, that she hated the movie. And I'm like, how in the heck can you hate the movie? And she said, those were not the dinosaurs I envisioned in my head. And I was like, Okay, so that kind of really spoke to me. So whenever you make a film, you know, you're in control of what these people, I mean, what they view and what they see, and you know, that's what I mean, I really love that about filmmaking.
Yeah, that's excellent. Then why don't we do this? I'm gonna, because I know you've had several interviews before. What have you been waiting for an interviewer to ask you that they didn't, and you're like, man, I want to say this story, or what is it you want to tell us?
Well, probably, I think I've only said this maybe a couple of times, but probably one of the highest moments that I got was whenever the film, we first found out that it was on the Amazon Top 100 list. We were going up against, I think when it first came out, because it was pre-sales at that time. As soon as we found out it was available for pre-sale, we put it all over social media. And the next day, my assistant director, Brent, called me. He's like, "Hey, do you realize you're number 14 on Amazon's Top 100 Hot New Horror Release list?" I'm like, "Get out of here." So he sent me the link, and I'm like, "There we are." And, you know, we're up there. Walking Dead was, I think, season 7 was number 1, and American Horror Story season 6 was number 2. I think 47 Meters Down was on the list, and some of the re-releases, like Pet Sematary, were on there. And we, like I said, we stayed on that Top 100 list for 15 weeks. And one of the coolest moments was I seen my film Unlisted Owner in front of George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, and I actually had a chance to meet George a few years back at a Days of the Dead horror convention, and I talked to him a little bit. So the fact that, you know, I have a screenshot of my movie right in front of George's, and then I got a picture of me and George together, and it's just, you know, I felt so honored to have one of my favorite horror directors, you know, have my movie right there with his. I was just, you know, I mean, how many people in the world would just love to even be on a list with their favorite director? I mean, let alone be right in front of them on the list.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. Jeez.
Yeah, that was, like I said, that was kind of like oh wow moment for me.
Did you feel like, did you, I know it might sound corny, but like you feel like you made it somehow, or?
I would say the point that I felt like I made it was just a few weeks ago. We did our first, the movie's available through Barnes and Noble as well as many other platforms. And we actually did our first in-store signing. As a lot of people know, you know, the digital platforms, streaming platforms have really taken away from the hard copy sales. And when I was a kid growing up, I love nothing more than to going into a record store or a CD store, movie store, and just seeing all the physical copies and going through and just, you know, looking at them. And they don't really do that anymore since all the blockbusters are gone and stuff like that. It's really hard to get your movie into a store. And our local Barnes and Noble in Evansville, Indiana, were amazing. We contacted them about doing a possible signing down there, and they were behind us 110%. So we actually did an in-store DVD signing for 2 hours in Evansville, and they actually have two copies. I think there's two copies of the film in the store right now, and it's just, you know, it's awesome. I went in there the other day, and I went right back to the DVD section. There it was, and that was just kind of like, wow, you know, we did it. We're in a store, you know.
Oh, that's excellent. Oh,
Yeah,
man.
and hopefully we can do some more Barnes and Noble DVD signings. We're in the talks with a store out of Indy to possibly do one there. And I don't know, we're just going to see what happens. And just, you know, if that one goes as good as the Evansville one did, we're just going to keep going and just see what happens.
Yeah, you guys gonna do some horror conventions too, maybe, or?
Yeah, we plan on doing it maybe later this year and stuff. Right now, it's just been kind of crazy, and I didn't really have time to really prep to go to some of the local ones. We had a Days of the Dead that's coming up in June and Indy, but I had no time to get prepped for it because I was doing the Barnes and Noble thing, and I'm trying to get all these Barnes and Noble things going while it's still, you know, hot. So.
Sure, absolutely. No, that'll be great. Conventions are such a blast. Horror fans are so cool.
Oh,
And,
yeah.
you know, of course I'm hoping that, you'll come east a little bit. So,
Oh, Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd love to, you know, if a convention invited me out, you know, to come, and I mean, I'd be more than happy to come out to them for sure. You know, I mean, it's one thing to have a booth at it, you know, and sell merch and stuff, but to sit there, you know, and, you know, have people come up and want a picture with you, want you to sign stuff, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, be on a guest thing. I mean, that'd be probably my ultimate goal for that, for sure.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh man, what was I gonna? Man, I had this great idea in my head and it just went away. But that's okay.
It'll come back.
Yeah, that's right. And if it doesn't come back today, it'll come back when you have your next movie out. We're doing this again. But
or you could just tweet me whenever you think of it.
Fair enough. So why don't you do this? Why don't you tell us where people can find, you know, the film and you and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, right now, Unlisted Owner is available on DVD through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, FYE. It was on Best Buy, but I think they're sold out of their copies in the same way with Turner Classic Movies on their website. I think they're sold out on those websites, I think. But it's definitely available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and FYE for sure. If you're into streaming, if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it on Prime. It's also available. You have to pay for it on YouTube, because that's the most common question I get. It's like, oh, your movie's on YouTube? Yeah, but you got to pay for it. it's like, you want me to make another one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's also available on Google Play, iTunes, and then one of the things I thought was the coolest, I have an Xbox One, and the fact that it was available on the Microsoft Store, I was just like, this is awesome. So I had to get it for my Xbox, you know.
Oh, that's great. And where can people find you on, like, you know, social media and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. You can find us on Facebook, the Unlisted Owner Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Unlisted Owner. Just search us on Unlisted Owner on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Unlisted Owner. I'm also on Instagram at Mr.Jed_Brian. And then I'm also on the Amino app. I think that's how you pronounce it. If you just search Mr. Jed Bryan on there as well.
Nice. Yeah, I just, while you were talking, I did the sneaky thing and I went to Facebook. Look at that. Yeah, there you are. It's a picture of you guys at Barnes & Noble.
Yep, there it is. Yep, we had a 6-foot-tall movie poster stand-up, and we actually haven't done the drawing yet, but we actually had an autograph poster contest. If people took a picture, a selfie in front of it, or a picture with me and the owner himself, Levi Atkins, in front of the poster, and put it on Facebook, Twitter, and use the hashtag Unlisted Owner Poster Contest, they're entered in for a chance to win an autographed Unlisted Owner movie poster. So, but we haven't exactly set a date for the drawing. We're trying to wait to see what other in-store signings we're going to be able to get before we announce that. So we're going to try to do like a 2-for-1 deal when we announce the official date we're going to do the drawing then.
That's cool. That's a great poster too, man.
Yeah, I wish I could take credit for it, but my distributor, I kind of went back and forth with my distributor on what we wanted for the poster, and they kind of took a little bit of my original design a little bit and implemented it in there, but I love how it turned out. I love how they put, you know, some of my friends' faces in the sickle, and it just, you know, it's an awesome poster. Love it.
Oh, excellent, man. Oh man, I'm so happy for you. This is great. It's like it all came together, you know, just from an idea in your head, and you made it happen, and that's fantastic. It really is.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, you just got to keep going after your dream. You just got to keep pushing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No argument there. And if people go to the Facebook page, you have tons of excellent pictures, which I know you also have on Twitter. But you know, the stills alone are just really awesome. And this is great. Thanks. I can't wait to see it, man.
Awesome. Yeah, we actually just got through, you know, doing Women in Horror Month. Today's the last day for it. And, I mean, we had amazing actresses in the film that we couldn't have, you know, Unlisted Owner wouldn't have happened without them. Andrea Potts Warner, she was She's our leading lady. She did amazing. Heidi Corona, she was awesome. And then actually the family of five, the original family of five in the film, they're called the Roth family. Mm-hmm. And I did that in honor of my favorite, you know, my favorite overall director, Eli Roth. So, mm-hmm. but the girls who were in that, you know, we you know, did a little thing about them, and then our makeup artists, and, you know, we just, you know, we feel really blessed to have the women who were in the film. You know, they just made it, you know, that much better.
Oh, that's excellent. No, I'm just so, I'm happy for all of you, because I know everybody put their, you know, time and effort and love into it when they weren't out partying when they shouldn't have been. But, oh, this is great, man. I'm so thrilled for you. That is so cool. And, well, everybody heard we're, you know, where they could find you and the movie, and I can't wait to check it out. So what I'm going to do now is let people know, well, you could find this show, obviously, on iTunes and on CrashPalaceProductions.com. You could follow me on Twitter, but definitely look out for Unlisted Owner, because it looks great, and Jed's cool, so we know you put so much into it. I mean, every picture I see, you know, everybody's happy, they're having a good time, and so you deserve, all of you deserve great things, man. So I'm just so thrilled for you.
Well, I appreciate you having me on and let me, you know, talk about the movie and the whole process, and, you know, and that was the thing too. Whenever we first started shooting, like I said earlier, I mean, the only information I could find on the web about being able to get a distribution deal or how to, you know, get your film out there, I mean, it was kind of limited. Of, you know, you need to get your film in the film festivals, and right. The fact that, you know, that wasn't happening, and I still wanted to get it out there. It was just, you know. So, but yeah, thanks for letting me on the show and being able to talk, and hopefully maybe I can help somebody out there that's, you know, an independent filmmaker is kind of struggling in the same situation I was.
Well, you gave me some ideas while I was during the interview, so I'm happy. And,
awesome.
No, thank you for coming on. And, man, you ever want to come on again? Just let me know. It's done.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You too. Tell everybody, from the film, I said hi. I know that sounds cheesy, but. I know once I have a funny feeling once I start watching this movie, I'm going to feel like I know these people. So that's a cool thing, man.
That's awesome. Well, I hope you enjoy it, and be sure to let me know what you think of it for sure.
Oh, we'll do. We'll do. Thanks so much, Jed.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.